So today, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 4, Text Number 15. Translation. You are envious of Lord Shiva, who is the friend of all living entities within the three worlds. For the common man, he fulfills all desires, and because of their engagement in thinking of his lotus feet, he also blesses higher personalities who are seeking after Brahmananda, transcendental bliss. Repetitively, please. You are envious of Lord Shiva, who is the friend of all living entities within the three worlds. For the common man, he fulfills all desires. And because of their engagement in thinking of his lotus feet, he also blesses higher personalities who are seeking after Brahmananda, transcendental bliss. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ordinarily, there are two classes of men. One class, who are grossly materialistic, want material prosperity, and their desires are fulfilled if they worship Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, being very quickly satisfied, satisfies the material desires of the common man very quickly. Therefore, it is seen that ordinary men are very much apt to worship him. Next, those who are disgusted or frustrated with the materialistic way of life worship Lord Shiva to attain salvation, which entails freedom from material identification. One who understands that he is not the material body, but his spirit soul, is liberated from ignorance. Lord Shiva also offers that facility. People generally practice religion for economic development, to get some money, for by getting money they can satisfy their senses. But when they are frustrated, they want spiritual Brahmananda, or merging into the Supreme. These four principles of material life, religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation exist. And Lord Shiva is the friend of both the ordinary man and the man who is elevated in spiritual knowledge. So it was not good for Daksha to create enmity towards him. Even Vaishnavas, who are above both the ordinary and the elevated men in this world, also worship Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava. Thus, he is the friend of everyone, the common man, the elevated men, and the devotees of the Lord. So no one should disrespect or create enmity towards Lord Shiva. Omagyana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Amilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Bhave Namaha. This is again another very intriguing part of the Bhagavatam. Very graphic descriptions, very powerful emotions being unleashed. I was really intrigued by the opening verses, and you could really enter the mind of Sati in this very peculiar dilemma she's in. Here it is, her father, there's a ceremony going on, so she's kind of, her family attachment is kind of being invoked. I want to go see my father and my sisters, my aunties, my friends. It's a special function. On these big functions, it's a time to meet all the family, because otherwise one didn't see them very much. So she's excited about this. At the same time, she's in a dilemma. Her husband just told her that if you go, you're going to be sorry. There's going to be problems. I'm going to be slighted. So she's actually fraught. Listen, this is very, very graphic here. Her mind unsettled. She moved in and out of the room as a swing moved this way and that. Powerful graphic. It's really depicting how the turmoil her mind's going. Have we ever done that?
you've had some in your mind, you kind of walk this way, and now you go back this way, and have you ever had that experience? Completely, don't know which way to go, which way to turn. So she's in this mode, and here this, her husband, who she loves, I mean, the next verse kind of really, you know, pictures it. Here she's like, she becomes shaking. Sally felt sorry at being forbidden to go see her relatives at her father's house. And due to affection for them, tears fell from her. She's crying. Tears are pouring from her eyes. Shaking and very much afflicted, she looked at her uncommon husband, Lord Shiva, as if she were going to blast him with her vision. I mean, powerful. This, you know, her mind's like, she's like, such intense emotions are going on. And her husband, who she loves so much, he's, you know, she wants to kind of burn him with her eyes. Not because of anything he's done wrong, but he's simply suggesting to her that she shouldn't go. It's going to be a problem for her. But she, her body's shaking. Her emotions are so high, her body's actually shaking. Anyway, that was it. She's going to go. So she decides to go. And then all her followers get into the mood of it, and they kind of, thousands of them follow her. Thousands of them. I mean, it's like, when I was reading this, I was remembering a recent incident we had a few years ago with our neighbors. And suddenly the word would, you know, as it was kind of, the initial thing was happening, it was kind of filtering through the corridors of the manor, and all the doors came running down. And I saw someone go, somebody was going like this, and there's like, everyone's like excited to kind of get into the heat of the moment. So here, these followers of Lord Shiva, they really want to do some damage to somebody. They're intensely excited about some prospect of hurting someone. And anyway, they put Sati on the back of a bull. It doesn't mention it was Nandi. He was certainly there. But they put her on the back of a bull. They gave her a pet parrot, or a pet bird, it mentions. And it was a very pompous royal parade that is mentioned here. So then she goes into the arena, and sure enough, Daksha didn't respect her. So immediately, all her followers like ready to go. They said they wanted to hurt somebody. They wanted to maim Daksha immediately. So she's very, very, very troubled in her mind. And then she starts laying out this really heavy, very deep philosophical blasting of her father. She's kind of mixing different things. She says, Lord Shiva, he is the most beloved. He's got no rivals. She's showing from all different points of view that what Daksha is doing to offend Lord Shiva is completely, it's not appropriate by any means. And she lists this whole line, reason, many, many reasons why Daksha's behavior is completely unacceptable. He's wrong. And she wants to really let him have it, how he's wrong. So not only is she does she have an affection for Lord Shiva, but she understands Lord Shiva. She knows who he is, you know, in terms of the universal order of things. So she says, you know, Lord Shiva is the most beloved. He has no rival. No one is very dear to him. That's also interesting. That sometimes if you see someone who's very dear to someone else, you might feel a bit offended. Why isn't that person dear to me? I remember Sasarupa Maharaj was mentioning a similar thing in his relationship with Srila Prabhupada. He was feeling a bit awkward sometimes that he felt other people may have had a closer relationship. Sadi's saying, don't worry about that even. It's not very dear to anybody. So you don't have to, that's not even a fault of Lord Shiva. And no one is his enemy. He hasn't got any enemies. So why are you envious? Only you, Daksha, only you are envious of Lord Shiva. He doesn't find any fault with anybody. And whatever good qualities are in someone, he magnifies them. He makes them more. So how is it that you're finding fault? How can you find fault in Lord Shiva? Then he says, actually, it's understandable for a materialist to deride great soul. I mean, she's really hammering into him here. You know, she's like really blasting him from every angle. The name of Lord Shiva purifies one of sin. His order is never neglected. Lord Shiva is always pure. How can he be? Only you're envious of him. And here we come to this verse. He's the friend of all living entities. He fulfills all the desires of common men, and he blesses higher personalities. It goes on, but I won't go into those. That's next verse is coming. But, so in her mind, you know, she's just,
really letting him know clearly, and all the assembly there, that Dacha's behavior is completely inappropriate. He is spotless, faultless, without any blemish. The next verse we're going to hear about his attire, but that's, you know, you don't consider those particular things from this viewpoint. We'll talk a little bit later about this, about envy. This word comes up a lot in these verses, but I won't go into that now. We'll go to that a little later. I'll just talk about a little bit about this verse we're on at the present time. So Prabhupada, or Lord Shati, is mentioning here that there are different types of persons that Lord Shiva is blessing. There's the Lokasya. Of course, in the verse, the great souls are mentioned first, but Prabhupada talks about the ordinary first. So we'll talk about the ordinary first. Lokasya, those in the world, of the world, the worldly people. The worldly people, they grossly materialistic. This we know, everybody wants more, wants something, wants better. And then there's also the higher, sorry, the lower. So Lord Shiva, he fulfills their desires. People in this world, the ordinary persons, they want something. Ashlishla, says here, Ashisha. They have many desires. And Lord Shiva fulfills them. In fact, it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that those who have material desires worship the demigods. And very quickly, by worshipping the demigods, by fruitive activities, one gets the results. But here, Lord Shiva is specifically noted as being very quick to fulfill desires. Ashutosh. That's what Ashutosh, right? Krishna reminds us in the Bhagavad Gita that actually, although the demigods may appear to be the givers of various blessings, actually that ability of the demigods to give blessings is being given by Lord Krishna. He's actually the bestower. He's actually the giver of all blessings. But it appears that it's coming from a particular personality. And actually, Krishna, although it's a materialistic thing, it's authorized. In other words, if you want some material benefit, there's a way of doing it. You can do it in a particular way. And here, if you want material benefit, yes, you can worship Lord Shiva. That's okay. There's a certain way of doing it. But it's not the highest gradation of progress for the living entity. In our devotional life, we also have a license or a methodology of enjoying ourselves. We hear in the Bhagavad Gita that four kinds of persons are considered to be pious, good souls. Those who are inquisitive, those who want knowledge, those who are distressed, and those who want more. They're all considered to be pious, very good, pious living entities. So to worship Lord Shiva for material desires, it's okay. But it's not the highest thing. It's not the highest thing. In our scriptures, we have the verse, "Our karma, sava karma va, moksha karma udaradi, tivrena, bhakti yogena, yajite purushampara." That whether you have no desires, whether you have all desires, whether you desire liberation, then perform devotional service, perform bhakti yoga. Because you'll attain those things, but at the same time, you'll get the highest thing. You'll get Krishna. Whereas, by being absorbed, by worshipping Lord Shiva for material gain, you won't necessarily get love of Krishna. He rewards these things. Now, as devotees, although we have this philosophical, license, yes, it says if I have all desires, I can worship Krishna, then I'll get my material desires fulfilled. There's a higher goal, which comes by worshipping the Lord, and that is that we actually give up all the material designations, sava, upadi, vinir, muktam. We give up this bodily concept. When you're no longer identifying oneself with the body and one's place of birth or one's species, then
then what is the point of having, wanting all the things, all the paraphernalia that kind of revolve around the body? So devotees are meant to get rid of these things, designations, and free from desire for knowledge or fruitive activities. So there's a process of fulfilling desires in devotional service, but it's just simply, it's not the goal in itself. It's simply something that we can, well, get it done and then go on. We're meant to go on further to pure devotional service. So here, so Lord Shiva, he fulfills. He will fulfill the desires of ordinary living men. And actually people often want to worship Lord Shiva for that reason, Prabhupada mentions here, that they want something material. They want some justifications. And we heard that there are often people who imitate Lord Shiva. And Prabhupada Maharaj is mentioning how, you know, they wear matted hair and they smoke ganga and all kinds of stuff. But it's not the highest thing. Now, there are those who want more. They don't want sense gratification. They've actually had enough of that. And they want liberation. They want to get free from the frustrations, actually due to frustration of materialistic life, that they want moksha. Prabhupada mentioned it, they want Brahmanda. It says here that Brahma Rasa Savarti B, that being engaged, they want RTB, they're seeking the nectar. We've heard that they're called bees. Mana Alibi, by the bees of the mind. They're like a little bee wants honey. Alibi is a black bee. And bees like honey. So there are certain persons who want some honey. They want some Brahma Ras. They've done with the Lokasya Ras, the Ras of the material world. They want the Brahma Ras. They want the spiritual bliss. They want a bit of transcendental bliss, or a lot of transcendental bliss. They want some happiness. So they're Mahatam, they're higher personalities. It's a higher want. It's still a want, but it's a higher want. To want spiritual liberation, it's a step in the right direction, but it's not the ultimate goal again. So Lord Shiva, he can also fulfill that. He can fulfill that requirement as well. He can give you freedom from the ignorance. He can give you, Prabhupada mentions here, one who understands that he is not the material body, but his spirit soul is liberated from ignorance. So Lord Shiva, he offers that facility. Then Prabhupada goes on to mention that generally there people practice religion for economic development. And we know this practically. Often, the other day I was talking to someone. Actually, it was a truck driver. He was taking us to Harrow for the procession down there. And he gave the usual argument that people give about religion. Well, so many wars have been created by religion. That's what they say. But actually, usually where there's wars is because of this reason, because people are engaging in religion for something, economic development. They want something. I'm a Hindu, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Jew, I'm a this, I'm a that. And it's kind of bodlyism. This is my area, my territory, my requirements. You're infringing on my requirements. It's got nothing to do with this idea that not being the body. It's not real spiritual wisdom. It's simply another kind of political party under the religious umbrella. So generally people, they perform religious activities for some economic prosperity. My dear God, my dear Lord, please fulfill this desire. Please give me this. When I was about 14, I was going to this Christian Fellowship Youth Club. And I met one man there. He was talking to me. Then somehow he wrote me a letter, and he was saying that he was sitting, at that time he was sitting his degree. And he said just before he went in there, he was praying to God to help him with his degree. It's not an impious thing. It's okay. It's very good. But generally, it's simply, it's simply for the body. It's simply revolving around what the body needs. So generally, people, that's why people worship God. They do for religious, for economic development. And why do they want economic development? Why do they want a better job? Why does anybody want a better job? for sense gratification. You want a better car. It's rather, I mean, I always have this constant, I suppose, perception or realization, whatever, that especially when you're in a traffic jam, the futility of actually this idea of having more. I mean, someone's got a Rolls Royce, someone's got a Mercedes, someone's got a Mini. It doesn't make any difference. You're going to get to your same place in the same amount of time. They've all got central heating. They've all got a radio. They've all got a chair. The basic facility for enjoying is exactly the same. But what the bigger car has is that feeling of, I've got a bit more. I'm a bit more up in the you know, hierarchy than someone else. It's a feeling of, I've got more, you've got less, therefore I'm actually feeling better. It's not a very idyllic way to enjoy life. I remember once I was in a car with Rohini Nandan, and we were in this line of cars at this T-junction, and this devotee we knew came back on a bicycle. And Rohini Nandan mentioned to me, he said, he's probably feeling very good now that we're all held up in a car and he's going by on his bicycle. So this is material enjoyment. Material enjoyment means that your happiness is based on you've got something a little better than someone else. So this is the line. The line is that people engage in religion, they want economic development. From economic development, they want joy, their senses. They want to enjoy a little more. But that frustrates. Everyone knows that. You know, it's interesting that people say, you know, people value the Western style of living. Everybody wants to live the Western style of living. But it has so much frustration with it. And everyone knows that in the Western world. There's always frustration. You know, high suicide rates are in the Western worlds. You know, probably the most horrific diseases are in the Western worlds. And, you know, all the marriage breakdowns are most prominently in the Western worlds. And this is the problem, that people have lost touch of what actually progress means in society. Progress means to be happy. But this cycle of life which exists, dharma, artha, karma, religion, economic development, sense gratification, doesn't actually satisfy. It leaves you frustrated. And people are feeling frustrated, and because they have no knowledge about moksha, then oftentimes they commit suicide, or they drown themselves in intoxication or some other kinds of inebriety to blank out the frustration of life. But those who are more progressed, they understand that there is a relief. And sometimes in that aspiration to get relief, they will worship Lord Shiva. I don't want to suffer anymore. Interpersonal relationships are too painful, they're too harsh, causing me too many problems. Let me blot out this interpersonal relationship. Let me become one with the Supreme. So often people are attracted to this concept. Their experience is that interpersonal relationships is very painful. And therefore, I cannot see a wonderfully transcendental, blissful interpersonal relationship with God. So the immediate thing is to be attracted to the moksha. But that's also not satisfying. It's a cycle. If you try that for a bit, then you go back around the cycle again. So in all counts, from Sati's explanation, Lord Shiva should not be offended. He should not be envied. You should not be angry with him, because he's fulfilling everyone's desires. He's satisfying everyone. Those who want material things, he'll give it to them. Those who want liberation, he'll give it to them. And also, Prabhupada mentions here that Lord Shiva, he's worshipped, he's respected, he's above the Vaishnava. Even the Vaishnavas, they worship Lord Shiva. The devotees are always respectful. This is a very important thing, that as Vaishnava, sometimes we forget it. We talked about it numerous times in various classes. But it's very important that in our allegiance to Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna, that we don't become disrespectful to Lord Shiva. I mean, especially Lord Shiva. I mean, the difference between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu is like described like yogurt, or somebody described as curd, yogurt and milk. There's no difference it's insignificant difference. So one should not be disrespectful to Lord Shiva. Indeed, one should not be respectful to any great person, any senior person.
I want to talk a bit about this this word envy a little bit. I find it interesting. In here, the word is druyati. Probably translated as envious. It actually means to bear malice or hatred. She wants to know, why are you bearing malice? And malice means the conscious desire to harm, especially a premeditated desire to commit a crime. So this is, we have to check our minds from that. We've already heard that one of the intrinsic flaws in our nature is that our nature is to feel inimical towards saintly people. That's a materialistic quality. Sadly, you mentioned that. So we're in our lives are going to struggle with that. We're going to fight. We're going to find problems with all that. The word envy means painful, resentful, admiring awareness of an advantage enjoined by another, accompanied by a desire to possess the same advantage. Now, we know this in our own lives. We feel that twinge, that stabbing of pain when we feel enmity towards somebody else. Envy is a horrible word to talk you envious. It's just a horrible word. Actually, it's painful to the person who feels envy. It's painful to the person who's the object of the envy. So we have to be very careful how we deal with it. It's a very important thing. You hear it on and on and on and on and on, different manifestations. And here, Lord, Daksha, supremely elevated person from all various standpoints, but he's plagued by this feeling of envy. So much so that Lord Shiva, who's so faultless, becomes the victim of maliciousness and heartfelt words and heartfelt feelings, all those things. So as devotees, we have to be careful that even though we're naturally going to feel the pains, the pangs, the painfulness, the pain of envy towards others, we're going to feel it in our own self. Why? I don't want to be envious of this person, but I'm feeling envious, I'm finding it difficult to deal with them. We have to be careful how we behave and be careful how we say things. As we heard yesterday, there's three types of offenses: offense by the mind, offense by the words, and offense physically. So if we're troubled by the mind, we should not let it come out of the mouth, and we certainly should not let it come out of the hands or the feet or the body. We should not do anything physically to kind of go along that pain or that envious kind of angerous nature. But we should try and check it in the mind. But the real way to do it, the real way to purge it from our hearts, is actually to understand the qualities of the devotees, to appreciate how wonderful they are, despite all their blemishes, faults and all. Like we hear that the moon's there, it's got a few blemishes. We don't really think it very relevant. It gives beautiful light in a dark, in the middle of the night sometimes. It's almost like daylight, the moon is so bright. So anyone who's engaged in devotional service, they're far, far wonderful. I mean, here are people engaging for materialistic things, they want moksha. But a devotee, he's got an idea about going back home, back to Godhead. He's got an idea about becoming a pure lover of Krishna. It's such a rare opportunity. I mean, let's look at it even practically. There's, 100,000 people in Watford? There's 10 million people in London? How many people are engaged in devotional service? Very, very, very few. So even though our fellow aspirers in spiritual life have so many flaws, so many faults, we should still always be consciously trying to try and become like Lord, try and see the good, try and exemplify that good. It's not that we're blind, we can't see what they're doing, but we try to find the good, we try to have a positive, affirmative outlook towards the devotees, especially the devotees. Obviously, one should have a positive, affirmative outlook to all living entities. One should befriend even the ants and the bugs and whatever else there is, but especially towards the devotees.